Hui Neng, the Sixth Patriarch, Part 1. Enno Hui Neng was of the Rou clan and originally came from Hanyo. His father, whose name was Kyoto, wielder of the jewel-studded sword, had served during the Bidoku era, 618 to 627 Common Era, as an official for the provincial district of Hsinchu in the city of Nankai, where he remained after he lost his government position. Following his father's death, Enno, mindful of his obligations, took care of and supported his mother. For a long time, the family was painfully destitute, with Enno earning a pittance as a wood gatherer. One day, whilst carrying a bundle of kindling into the marketplace, he heard a stranger chanting the diamond scripture. At the point where it says, "Enkindle that attitude of mind which does not dwell anywhere in particular," he experienced an awakening to his true self. Having heard this, Enno asked the stranger what the scripture was and from whom he had received it. The man answered, "It is called the Diamond Scripture, and I received it from the acknowledged great teacher, Diamond of Obey." Enno hastened home to tell his mother of his intention to seek out a teacher for the sake of the Dharma. Immediately upon his arrival in Shoshu, he met the eminent scholar Ryo Shiryaku, who befriended him. Shiryaku's mother-in-law was none other than the female monk Mujinso, the inexhaustible treasure house. Her custom was to recite the Nirvana scripture, and after Enno had listened to her for a while, he began to comment to her on the meaning, whereupon she held out the scroll and asked about a particular word. Enno said to her, "As I do not know how to read characters, please just ask me about the meaning." Mujinso said, "If you do not know how to read characters, how can you understand the meaning?" Enno replied, "The wondrous principle of the Buddhas does not depend on written characters." Mujinso, startled by this reply, told the village elders that Enno was a man who was practicing the way and therefore should be given provisions. After this, the residents vowed to come and pay their respects to him. There was, in the vicinity, the ancient site of the former Horinji, the Precious Grove Monastery near Canton, and the people agreed to rebuild it so that Enno could live there. Monks and laity, male and female, gathered like thick banks of fog, and, in less than no time, transformed it into a monk's treasured residence. One day, Enno suddenly said to himself, "I am seeking the great teaching, so how can I possibly stop halfway there?" The next day, he left for the hermit retreats in the western caves of Shuangzhou County in Sichuan Province, where he met Meditation Master Chen, he whose wisdom is far-reaching, and asked for his assistance in realizing the way. Chen replied, "I can see from the look of you that your spiritual resources are clearly outstanding, and that you are really an extraordinary person. I have heard that Bodhidharma of the Western Regions has transmitted the seal to Daimon on Obei Mountain. You should journey there to investigate how you can resolve the matter of realizing enlightenment." Enno took his leave and went straightway to Obei, where he sought an audience with Daimon Konin, who asked him, "Where do you come from?" Enno answered, "From south of the southern pass." Daimon asked, "What do you want above all else?" Enno replied, "I seek only to become a Buddha." Daimon then said, "Southerners do not have the Buddha nature, so how can you realize Buddhahood?" Enno answered, "Amongst people there are southerners and there are northerners. What has the Buddha nature to do with that?" Daimon recognized that here indeed was no ordinary person, but, chiding, told him to go to the rice-pounding shed. Enno bowed low and left for the shed where, for 8 months, he labored hard, pounding rice day and night without ceasing. Daimon, realizing that the time for transmission had arrived, told his assembly of monks, "The true teaching is hard to explain. It is not enough to vainly memorize what I say and proclaim it as your own. Let each of you compose a poem according to your own understanding. The one whose phrases tally most profoundly with the intent of the teaching will receive both the kesa and the teaching." At that time, Jinshu, he of spiritual excellence, a senior monk in charge of ceremonial training for the more than 700 junior members of the Sangha, was well versed in the inner and outer meaning of doctrines. So the assembly looked up to him. They all excused themselves from writing a poem, pleading that if it were not the worthy Jinshu, who could possibly be more suited to this task? Jinshu, hearing of the community's adulation, composed a poem without giving it a second thought. When it was completed, he wished to present it to the master and tried to do so several times. But each time that he arrived outside the master's room, his mind became confused and his body broke out in a sweat. Although he was determined to present his verse, he was unable to bring himself to do so. Over the next 4 days, he tried 13 times to present it, but could not. Jinshu then thought, why not write it on the corridor wall where the master will see it when passing? If the master should chance to say that it is satisfactory, I can come forth, bow, and say that I had composed it. If the master should say that it is inadequate, I can bow to that, then go into the mountains and pass my years there. After all, having received such reverence and respect from others, what better way to train? That night, at midnight, without informing anyone, he wrote his verse by lantern light on the wall of the southern corridor, presenting what his mind had perceived. His poem read, our mind is a Bodhi tree. Our mind like a dressing stand with its clear mirror. Time upon time, let us strive to wipe it clean, and let not dust or dirt abide thereon. Diamond suddenly spotted this poem whilst passing through the corridor and, upon reading it, knew that it was the work of Jinshu. He praised it, saying, if succeeding generations put the teaching of this poem into practice, they too will find the surpassing fruits of Buddhahood. And had everyone recite it aloud from memory. In the rice shed, Enno overheard the recitation of the poem and asked a fellow lay trainee what the verse was. The trainee replied, do you not know that Reverend Master is seeking his Dharma heir and has therefore asked everyone to compose a poem that expresses what is in their heart, and that this is the one that Jinshu has composed? Reverend Master has praised it deeply. He will undoubtedly transmit the kesa and the teaching to him. Enno asked how the poem went, and the trainee recited it. After a long silence, Enno remarked, "It is indeed beautiful, but it is not quite complete." The trainee ridiculed Enno, saying, "What does a southerner know? Do not spout such nonsense." Enno replied, "You do not doubt what I say, do you? Pray, show your understanding with a poem." The trainee did not reply. They just looked at each other and smiled. That night, Enno asked a boy attendant in the temple to lead him to the self-same corridor. Then, whilst he himself held a candle, he had the boy write down the following poem next to Jinshu's. "Bodhi is truly not a tree, nor is the clear mirror a mirrored dressing stand. From the first, not a single thing exists. So from where is dust or dirt to arise?" After seeing this poem, everyone in the monastery, high and low, was saying, "This is truly a poem by a flesh and blood bodhisattva," boisterously praising it up and down. Daimon, knowing full well that it was a poem by Enno, made a point of saying, "Who wrote this? To be sure, someone who has not yet seen his true nature," and erased it. As a result, everyone in the assembly paid no more heed to it. When night fell, Daimon entered the rice shed in secret and asked Enno, "Is the rice indeed white?" To which Enno replied, "It is indeed white, but it has not yet been winnowed." Whereupon Daimon struck the rice-pounding mortar thrice with his staff, and Enno shook the rice in the winnowing fan thrice, then followed Daimon to his quarters. Daimon remarked, "All the Buddhas have renounced the world for one great reason, to lead and guide others to the other shore in accordance with their natural abilities, great or small. Over time, instructions have arisen on the 10 stages of a bodhisattva's development, the three vehicles, the sudden and the gradual approaches, and so forth, as gateways for teaching. Furthermore, the unsurpassed, subtle and profound, perfectly clear, genuine and true eye and treasury of the true law was imparted to the Buddha's senior disciple, the Venerable Makakasho. In turn, it was transmitted down through 28 generations of Indian ancestors to Bodhidharma. After he arrived in this land, he found great teacher Ekka, who, having received it, passed it on until it reached me. Now, by means of the Dharma treasure and the transmission Kesa, I hand it on to you. Guard well. Do not let the line become extinct. Enno, kneeling to receive the Kesa and the teaching, spoke, "The teaching I have already received. On whom shall I bestow the Kesa?" Daimon replied, "Long ago, when Bodhidharma first arrived, there was none who yet had the faith, so he passed on the Kesa to make clear that the recipient had realized the teaching. Nowadays, faithful hearts are already ripe, and the Kesa may prove a pretext for squabbling and strife. Let it stay with you, and do not pass it on further. Moreover, you should seclude yourself in some far distant place, and bide your time until you begin to teach and convert others. The life of him who receives the Kesa hangs as if by a single thread." When Enno asked where he should hide, Diamond replied, "Wherever it suits you. When coming in contact with others, you would do well to conceal it." Enno bowed low and, having already offered up the Kesa, took his leave. There was a river crossing at the foot of Obei Mountain. Daimon personally came down to see Enno off. Bowing, Enno said, "Reverend Master, you should return quickly. Having already found the way, I should ferry myself across." Daimon replied, "Although you have already found the way, I should still be the one who ferries you across. So, taking the pole, Daimon crossed to the far shore with Enno and then returned alone to the monastery. None of the assembly knew of these events." End of part 1.